everybody. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Richard Mori. I'm an applied statistician and a psychologist. And I want to echo something that Marcus said earlier about this experience of trying to replicate something and failing and wondering whether it was you or what. This exact same thing happened to me as well. So I want to reiterate this. I was, as a graduate student, I was trying to replicate an affective priming study. I wanted to, I wasn't really super interested in affective priming, but I wanted the data so that I could model it, right? So this was a textbook affective priming effect. And so you go to intro psych textbooks and you'd find this study. And I tried and I failed. I contacted the authors. I said, hey, I'm having trouble replicating this. Can you send me your materials? No response from any of the authors. And so I wasn't sure what to do. And so I contacted another a well-known priming researcher. And I said, hey, I can't replicate this. And the response I got was, oh, yeah, we've tried that multiple times. Yeah, it doesn't work. We just haven't published it because, well, you can't publish null results. So this knowledge was out there, but it wasn't public. And this is really stressful for an early career researcher because you have a limited amount of time in order to do your work. And this lack of replicability really affects people. So hopefully we can straighten some of this out in the next few years. But so today I'm going to be talking about power and why power and reproducibility are linked, and how we need to be thinking about studies cumulatively. Some of you who know me from my Bayesian work will wonder, why is he talking about power and significance tests? The last time I gave this talk, EJ was there. Where is he? He's here somewhere. And he said, why are you giving a talk about significance testing and power? You're a Bayesian. And the reason is because this is what most people sort of have experience doing. And this logic applies to Bayesians as well, right? This what I'll be saying, there's nothing magic about it. I'm just going to couch it in the language of significance testing and power. But the same thing applies regardless of how you're looking at the data. So when we do science, sometimes the only way we think of our as being connected to other people is when we're reading our citation counts. But in actuality, no experiment is an island. We have to think about experiments as being connected to other experiments other than our own, right? Of course, within studies even, we have connections between experiments because we say things like, this effect was observed in experiment one and not experiment two. And by that we mean that it was significant in experiment one and not in experiment two. We talk about this across studies as well. Particularly, reviewers will ask you to address this. We observed the effect was significant under conditions X and not conditions Y. Explain that. And again, why would somebody else have found that effect but you didn't? And you have to make up a story about that, right? So this happens all the time. We want cumulative science, right? That's what we want. We want to be able to explain why some findings are different, right? Our question is really, are they different, right? And those of you who have read these papers and a few others that address this question know what I'm going to talk about here. If you want to talk about two studies and whether they're different, you can't just look at their significance, right? One study can be significant and another study non-significant, and yet the results can be very similar. You know, you can just be over that 0.05 pump in one study and just under it in another. And people make this error an awful lot. So it's often called the Gelman and Stern error after this well-known paper by Gelman and Stern. The internet just did something really weird. There it goes. Okay. And then Forstman et al. Have also written about this this issue. If you want to know whether two things are different, you need to explicitly test that somehow. We're going to talk about this in the context of significance testing. Now, a sort of special case of this was the reproducibility project psychology, which Marcus has already alluded to, in which there were about 100 studies that people attempted to replicate these with very similar methods. Here are the results. So on the x-axis here, you have the original effect size in correlation units. Here you have the replication effect size, and you can see that actually a lot of the replications, they have effect sizes of around zero. That's not universally true. Some of them went fine. But about 40% of these, just shy of 40% of these, were significant the second time around for the replication. This has caused a lot of talk about reproducibility problems in psychology. And the question was, did it replicate? Now, that's a hard question to answer, right? Now, the reproducibility project psychology had a number of definitions of reproducibility. I'm going to focus on one in terms of the difference between the effect sizes, which wasn't really focused on. But there were a lot of failures to replicate with respect to the significance of the second study. Only 40% of the replications were significant. How do we explain this? Well, there's actually a few things that we could do. We could talk about maybe the original studies were overblown, and there's a number of reasons why that might be true. Publication bias is a big one, p-hacking, etc. Hidden moderators was something that was talked about after this. What does that mean? That means that maybe there's an important property of experiment one that wasn't the case in experiment two. And you didn't know what that was. And while human behavior is variable, maybe it was done in one location and then the replication was done in another, and maybe that's important, right? How do you know? That's called a hidden moderator. Now we're going to talk about, when we talk about cumulative science, this is really important because hidden moderators are precisely things that we want to know about, right? If we wanted to study a phenomenon and there were these moderators there, we would want to know what they were and how they affected things. So, it's not just hidden moderators, but any moderators. Some people actually said, well, it's not so bad. Actually, this work that I'm talking about here was, I began working on it because I was reacting to this particular reaction by a group of researchers, Patil, Leek, and Peng, who said, hey, it's not so bad. It's we would expect something like 95% of studies to be within this sort of replication confidence interval, but 75% were. So, it's not as bad as maybe you might think. But it actually is really bad, and I'll show you why. If I can. Maybe
just use your PDF.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. Now, I'm going to argue that a lot of this was due to misunderstandings of power that a lot of researchers have. And this actually interacts with things like publication bias and p-hacking to cause the problem. So let's talk about power. What is power? Power is a sort of measure of the sensitivity of your test. Now, a significance test has two sort of error probabilities. One of the error probabilities is called a type 1 error, and this is how sort of liberal or conservative your test is in saying there is an effect, when in fact there isn't. But for the whole range of possible non-zero effect sizes, there's also a probability of missing that effect, right? That's also an error. And power is 1 minus that error. So it's about the sensitivity of your test to detect all the possible effect sizes that that could be true. Now, this shows three sampling distributions for, I'm going to talk about correlation. And for those of you that are familiar with correlation, you're probably familiar with Fisher's Z-transform, which is what I'm going to use. I'm going to use Fisher's Z-transform because the sampling distribution of the Fisher's Z-transform of a correlation is normal. It's just a convenient way of transforming the correlation so that we have something normal. So suppose that I had no effect. Here's the sampling distribution of Fisher's Z. It's right around zero. And you can see that even if there's no effect, I could get a fairly sizable, here's the correlation on this axis, a fairly sizable correlation out for this particular effect, sample size. Here is a correlation of about 0.3. This is the sampling distribution for Fisher Z if, in fact, the correlation is about 0.3. And you can see that this red area here is 80%. So my power, that is the probability that I will detect or get beyond the significant, the cutoff for significance, if there is an effect of a correlation of 0.3 is 80%. Now, there's another sampling distribution on here, and it's this one right here. This is the sampling distribution of Fisher's Z if, in fact, you have a true correlation that is 70% of 0.3, right? So it's not too far away, right? It's pretty close. For that true effect size, you only have a power of 50%. And in fact, that's how power works. You might think you have high power to an effect size, but actually, you could have low power to effect sizes not too much below that. So we'll talk about that in a bit. Here are the power curves for all of the studies, all the 1 degree of freedom studies in the reproducibility project psychology. So the ones that I can put in as a correlation. Let's look at the x-axis here. This is the true correlation, and here on the y-axis is the power. Let's take a look at this study right here. This, I don't even know why they bothered to do a replication of this study. You'll see why I say this in a few slides. This study, this original study, to detect a true correlation of 0.7 only had something like 0.65 power, less than 80% power. To detect a true correlation, if it was there, of 0.7, it had less than 80% power. Why would you bother to even do this experiment, right? This is a really weak experiment. Now, somehow it was significant, which, 5% of even null studies are. But this doesn't seem like a worthwhile way to spend your time doing studies that are that underpowered. On the other hand, there were some really big studies here. You can see this gray line that's original study had tens of thousands of participants. It had a lot of power to detect even very small effect sizes, but that's the minority. If you look at the median study here, which is this red line, it's hard to do this from from back here, but you can see that they only had 80% power for sort of these medium size effects. And there are a lot of studies that had sort of low power for even very large true correlations. Why were people even doing these studies? Well, at this point, I'm gonna try to paint for you a metaphor so that you can see the problem here. Let's say that somebody comes to you and they have two pictures. And these two pictures are of people, right? One person in each picture. And they say to you, okay, we need you to identify, we need you to tell whether the person in both of these pictures is the same. It's very important for an investigation. We need to know if these two photos show the same person, right? But the problem is, both pictures are very blurry. Now you look at these pictures and you tell the person, well, I can't tell whether these are the same person. Both pictures are too blurry, right? And so they say, oh, you're right. You can't tell that. Nobody can. But luckily, we have a very high resolution picture of version of one of these pictures, right? So they replace the one of the blurry pictures with a very high resolution picture, and they say, okay, you have one really blurry picture and one very clear picture. Are they the same person? Well, you still say, well, I don't know, right? Because that other picture is very blurry. You can't tell whether those are the same person if one of the pictures are very blurry. And the same logic is going to apply to replications. If you have a very low power study, the original study, you're never going to know whether you can replicate that. So what's going on here? Well, original designs are underpowered for a lot of reasons. They're underpowered because, well, power wasn't even considered. There's a lot of sort of folklore around sample size in science, you know, like how many subjects do you need? Well, 20, that sort of thing. Power is often not even considered. Often, power is computed under some expected effect size, or power is computed using previous results, right? Where somebody will say, oh, what do I need for my power analysis? Well, let me go back into the literature and see what those effect sizes are. And this is disastrous for power. Because what you should be doing is computing power under some minimum interesting effect size, right? Because remember, a significance test is about how sensitive you want your test to be. It doesn't actually matter what people found before so much as whether you want to have either, if you think in terms of precision, you can say highly precise results. This is what you should be doing. You should decide how sensitive you want your test to be. It shouldn't be based on previous results. This is what I've already said. So what is going on? We have an underpowered original design, and then we have what's called the statistical significance filter. This is what Gell-Mann calls it, where null results are often discarded. So then we only see the big effect sizes. Then we have publication, then people power from the original effect size. So this is inflated. It's massively inflated. And then we have an underpowered replication design. Then we have regression to the mean, and we get failed replications. Misunderstandings about power creeped into the process when people decided to power from the original effect size and not to determine how sensitive they wanted their study to be. So, if we want cumulative science, now let's go back to that picture, the metaphor with the pictures. If we want to know whether those pictures are different, we need to have high resolution pictures, versions of both pictures, right? That's what we have to have. You can't have a really blurry picture and a really clear picture and expect to tell the difference between the people or to tell whether they're the same, right? You can't do that. So we have to consider differences from the start. If we want cumulative science, if we want to be able to say, oh yes, this result was different from this one, we have to think about this from the start. So let's talk about a significance test for whether two correlations are different. This is a very simple one based on Fisher's Z-transform. There's nothing complicated here. It's just a Z-test, right? So we're going to do a Z-test on the two correlations. For the reproducibility project psychology, we have the original and we have the replication. Now, I want to focus on this standard error. Notice that this standard error is based on two sample sizes, n in the original and n in the replication. And if you look at sort of the form of this, you can see that it takes the form of the variance of the difference is approximately the variance of the original plus the variance of the replication. That is, if you have a lot of variance in the original, then you're limited. The resolution of your differences is limited by the variance in both the original and the replication. So if you want to know whether two things are different, you have to have a high-resolution picture of both. So here's three facts. The variance of a difference of independent estimates is the sum of the individual variances. So, like I just said, the uncertainty for whether a replication is successful is limited by the uncertainty in both, equally. And this is not even considering issues of publication bias, these sort of things. If one study is imprecise, it's very difficult to know whether another study is similar to it or not. And in fact, this is not just a question of the reproducibility project psychology. This is how cumulative science has to work. We have to have high-resolution pictures of our effects, right? Otherwise, we're not going to know whether, you know, for instance, we changed something and we got a different result. If we don't have highly precise estimates of our effects or high-powered studies, we're not going to be able to build a cumulative science. So how does this affect the reproducibility project psychology? Here is the study results in a slightly different way from what I showed you before. On this axis is the original study's correlation, and on this axis is the observed difference between the replication and the original in Fisher's Z units. And so let's look out here. Here's our really problematic study. We have actually a couple of very large original correlations. And what I want you to focus on here is the 95% confidence intervals of these studies here on the difference. This is the difference, right? If we're asking the question, did we get a different result between the original and the replication in the RPP? We don't actually know. We know here, for instance, for this study, that this difference could range anywhere from just above zero to a difference in the correlation of, you know, maybe 0.7, right? I mean, do we really know anything about the difference between these two results? Well, for this one, we know that it was significant, but we don't know much else. I love the fact that this is even, they did actually manage even to find a significant effect here. But it's just the 95% confidence interval is just right above zero. But for a lot of these studies, you can see the 95% confidence intervals are very wide. So we're talking about differences in correlation that might be zero or they might be 0.6, right? These are big differences. And we don't know about any particular study here whether we managed to get something close because the original studies were so low powered. We have about 70% non-significant differences, so we just don't know what to say. So the standard error of this difference, because of the way it depends on the sample size of the original and the sample size of the replication, we just can't tell what's going on. Even if we had an infinitely powered replication, we wouldn't know whether we replicated, right? So we need high power to detect meaningful differences. And so let's talk about the power to detect differences between two studies. Here is a bunch of power curves, one for each of the RPP studies. And you can see that this is the difference in Fisher's Z, but right around here you can read it as just about the difference in correlation units. Because you can see the correlation units are up here on the top. And you can see most of the pairs of studies in the RPP had very low power even to detect differences between correlations of 0.5 and 0.6, right? So can we have a cumulative science with sample sizes this small? And I would argue that it's very, very difficult to have a cumulative science if you don't have power to detect differences between studies. So what you end up doing is, in fact, making up stories about, you know, why one study was significant and one study wasn't. But it's really all noise. That's what you're looking at because you don't have high power to detect these differences. So how do we fix this problem? Remember, we have to think of every study as if it's going to be a part of this great cumulative science enterprise. We have to assume that somebody in the future, maybe us, but somebody in the future is going to look at our study and think, what if I change something small? Will I get a different, result? Now, I want you to remember that we said that one of the explanations for the failures in the reproducibility project psychology was hidden moderators. But given what we've seen here, we know that even in the ideal cases with these sample sizes, we couldn't, if we designed an ideal experiment and only changed one thing and we looked at the results, no publication bias, nothing, we wouldn't be able to tell whether that moderator had a big effect or a small effect, right? We wouldn't be able to tell. So all the talk of hidden moderators, you can't see. But those are sort of things that are interesting to us as scientists. So if we can't look at those, if we can't look at moderators, well, what are we doing, right? We need to have pairs of studies or sequences of studies in which we can look at differences. So how do we fix this? We think about powering a study so that a similarly sized study has a high probability of finding a meaningful difference from ours, if one exists, right? So we assume that somebody is going to, in the future, be interested in a difference from our study. Now, what a practical effect will this have on your effect sizes? Well, roughly, it will double them, right? That's what you have to do. You have to double your effect sizes for a two-group design. Now, I think that's a cost. It's definitely, but it's the cost of doing cumulative science. And it's actually sort of nice because it eliminates some of the problems of doing a power analysis. Like, it eliminates choosing a sort of minimum meaningful effect size. Now you got to think about differences. And I have the hunch that in a lot of cases, maybe I'm wrong, the differences are a little easier to think about than a minimal sort of maybe a correlation. It guarantees high power for an effect size of a chosen magnitude because when we power for differences, we're building in extra participants, right? What we normally do is we power to a difference from a constant, like zero, but if we power to a difference between two things that are variable, like two studies, then we're gonna have a higher power to detect what we used to power to, right? It guarantees interpretable differences between studies, which is what we want. We want cumulative science. And that's what we need to focus on. But, like I said, it increases necessary sample size. But that's just the cost of doing good science, I think. So, just to wrap up, we know this, designs are underpowered in psychology. And I think this is in a large part due to misunderstandings about power. And this largely explains the RPP result. We just don't have, things don't replicate because our effect sizes are overblown and we have very low sample sizes. We wouldn't expect them to replicate. Differences are, this should say even more underpowered. I somehow got dropped from the PDF. But differences are even more underpowered than the effects we're looking at. And I would argue that it's extremely difficult to have a cumulative science under these conditions. And so we should be thinking about our studies always as being parts of sequences of studies where we want to tell the difference between the results. And so we want to power to detect meaningful differences. And that's all I have.